This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Oh, hi. Took me a few moments to figure out what to put in the little headline bar there. Actually, it took me all of 3 seconds. After seeing the last three witnesses in the trial of Donna Adelson. It don't look too good when your kids... At least two of the three so far have checked the box that says, we think mom's guilty. The courtroom in Tallahassee has been tense before, but over the last 2 days of testimony, the spotlight has burned hotter than ever on Donna Adelson, the 75-year-old matriarch of the Adelson family. Is accused of orchestrating the murder-for-hire plot that left her former son-in-law, law professor Dan Markell, dead in 2014. What is it that jurors have heard that such a line, Donna Adelson is effed, should be spread across the screen in that way? Well, we'll get into that. And I want to hear your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube as we go through this. Jurors have already heard about the broader conspiracy, the hitman hired, the chain of connections through Donna's son, Charlie, and the family's years-long obsession with relocating Wendy Adelson and her children from Tallahassee to Miami. But what was unfolding in the last few days in a very dramatic fashion is... not from law enforcement or professional experts. It's from inside Donna Adelson's own family. The enmeshment that once held them all together, it appears to be torn. It appears to be gone. Off into the ether, with Donna sitting off on the side, looking like this. On the stand, her daughter, Wendy, her oldest son, Robert, and Wendy's ex-boyfriend, Jeffrey LaCase, each painted pieces of a portrait woven together. The testimony suggests not just a controlling mother, but a family culture built around Donna's influence. And while Wendy tried at times to minimize her mother's role, you may remember the, I don't remember. Really, like, the crux of the last 11 years of your life. The key details of those moments that you lived through. You don't remember? I guess it's one way of pleading the fifth. Roberts and LaCasse added sharp memories, believe it or not, they remembered stuff. If you don't remember, Wendy, don't worry. Your ex and your brother got your back. Maybe just enough to one day find those agents raiding your home and taking you away too. But who knows? I don't know. It's a big question with Wendy. I do think she could be a complete victim of this family. But there are enough details here, and enough that after 11 years, she's still tight enough with her family to say, I don't remember, when maybe you should have turned state witness a long time ago. And maybe you didn't know anything leading up to this until after it happened. And that's why you were vomiting sick in a restaurant shortly after a Charlie celebratory murder dinner. I could see that being upsetting, Wendy. I could see that being very reasonably upsetting. And living through this hell with your hellish family. Time to stop standing up for him in any way, shape, or form. It looks like she's getting a little closer to that. But the worry is incriminating herself. And I don't know. She's never been charged with anything. And like I said, I don't know. I don't know that she knew, at least going in. I think she knew there was capabilities and potential, and her family was crazy enough to do something like this. But I do wonder if the cognitive dissonance made her think, nah, that'll never happen. Well, Robert and LaCase added some sharp, unsettling details that prosecutors will argue point directly towards Donna's guilt, and they're pretty large arrows. Let's talk about Wendy first. From the moment Wendy Adelson walked into the courtroom, her eyes, or the eyes of the jury, stayed fixed on her. And her eyebrows stayed fixed in position, too, because of Botox. I don't know any other explanation. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but Wendy's eyebrows don't move. She was there under subpoena, testifying with immunity for what she said on the stand, though still carrying the shadow of being named an unindicted co-conspirator in the broader case. Wendy tried to present herself as detached, forgetful, careful at others. I don't remember became the refrain, but under questioning, she admitted enough to leave little doubt about her mother's reach. Emails shown to the jury revealed Donna's encouraging her to put on a performance in family court. Literally looking up like acting tips to give to her adult daughter. Here, I watched this YouTube video on how to act. Literally, act this way. How to be a good actress, was the quote. Donna pushed Wendy to use religion as a weapon against a Jewish person, even suggesting she fake a conversion to Catholicism for her children to rattle Markel, who's a Jewish person, a devout Orthodox Jew. And it doesn't stop there. This monster, this narcissistic monster of a mother, God knows what personality disorder we're dealing with over here. One could probably guess a few, but we can't diagnose anything. At one point, Donna, who is grandma, okay? Mom and dad should be making these decisions, but Donna proposing they actually go and baptize the boys. She said she'd already looked into it, and it could be arranged in 2 weeks. We're doing that for who? Who are we doing that for? Are we doing that for Wendy? Because that's her choice, and it's also the choice of Dan Markell. It's not grandma's choice to decide when and how the child's going to be baptized. And oh, by the way, the kids are Jewish. So who's that going to benefit exactly, Donna? Why would you do that? Why would you try to cause that sort of chaos in your daughter's marriage, even after they're divorced, in your grandchildren's lives, in your daughter's life. You're just going in there with a giant old ice pick and just twisting. I'm going out doing this because I love them and I want their little baby souls to be in heaven with me because God knows he's going to burn them in hell at the stake if they're not baptized immediately because all little babies go burn in hell. They told me that when I was in Sunday school and when I was three, so it must be true. Other messages were no less chilling. She also didn't care and made references to dressing the children up as Hitler Youth, if that made an impact on Markell. It's beyond just, we don't like him, we don't come from the same religion. This is full-on anti-Semitic show from Donna Adelson. So I guess we can add anti-Semite to the list of all the things that Donna is. Other messages are no less chilling. Donna called Markell a narcissist, a bastard, an asshole. Well, isn't that the pot calling the kettle black? And worse, she pressed Wendy to aggravate him, to scare him, to take something from him, to show that leap what would make him absolutely miserable. And only the words of a narcissistic mother-in-law could those terms come out with such vitriol. Wendy confirmed that her mother described her life in Tallahassee as if she were a hostage or a prisoner. Couldn't she just see Donna? Oh, my daughter, she's up there with Dan. We're going to dress the kids as Hitler Youth. Take pictures of, like, what the fuck? In her self-aggrandized, pity-me tone. And Donna, being Donna, repeatedly told her relocation was non-negotiable to your 30-some-year-old adult daughter. Non-negotiable. When pressed, Wendy admitted her mother hated Markell during the height of the divorce battles. Later, she tried to soften the language, saying her mother was just mad. You know, she's just kind of mad. I don't know. Is she? I would say she's kind of controlling. I guess so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Huh? She's just mad rather than hateful. The prosecutors had their receipts, literally emails where Donna spelled out her disdain. For jurors, a cumulative effect was clear. Donna wasn't an uninvolved grandmother wringing her hands from afar. She was an active strategist in her daughter's divorce, feeding Wendy arguments, drafting ideas, and demanding results. And then came Robert, the other son who got the hell out of there as soon as he could and realized he wanted a better life. If Wendy was hesitant, Robert Adelson was blunt. God bless Robert. The family's oldest child, an ear, nose, and throat doctor living in New York, testified with a mixture of calm and unease. Unlike Charlie or Wendy, Robert had distanced himself from the family years earlier. That distance gave his words extra weight in the courtroom. And what I would describe as, he sunk her boat. You sunk my battleship. He described his mother as the driving force of the household, controlling, overly involved, and fixated on the lives of her adult children. He said Donna became especially consumed with Wendy's divorce, far more than Charlie ever was. Charlie, mind you, the one who's already charged and in prison and been convicted of being part of this murder conspiracy. Robert recalled being told that Donna helped orchestrate Wendy's separation from Dan Markell down to the details. She rented her daughter a new apartment in Tallahassee, moved money around, and timed the phone call to Dan so he would learn of the split just before giving a speech. You know, for his job where he pays bills and supports your grandchildren, you demented, crazy bitch, Donna. Donna, he said, told the story with something close to glee. We called him and he was about to give a speech.
And I can't help but feed off of other people's unhappiness, because I truly, deep down, am a very deeply unhappy woman. Always have been, always will be. But I like to mask it this way and deflect.
You narcissistic C-word. He also testified that Donna worked on Wendy's court filings from afar. Donna worked on Wendy's court filings from afar. Emailing suggestions, edits, even proposing a $1 million bribe to convince Markell to allow relocation to Miami.
We'll just pool our money together. It's what mommy wants. Mommy needs enough money from all you so that Wendy, who is an adult, can move down here. We can bribe the kids, you know, the kid's dad to not be around. Let's give him money. He'll go away because it's what I want.
The logic of Donna Adelson and every narcissist mother on the planet. Perhaps the most damning moments came not from memories of the divorce, but from Robert's description of his mother's reaction after Markell's death. Robert said that when he asked Donna what she thought of the murder, she told him flatly, "I don't know, and I don't care. It doesn't concern me." More or less. He told jurors that what disturbed him most was not her answer, but her lack of curiosity. Nobody in the family seemed interested, he testified, almost as if they'd already knew what had happened. He also described the phone call shortly after the murder in which Donna told him not to talk to police. When he replied that he already had, she dismissed it, saying, "Well, you don't know anything anyway." What's there to know, Donna? What do you know more than he knows about a murder that you supposedly had nothing to do with, even though your name's on the check that went to the woman that paid the hitman? You don't know anything anyway. The words that will keep Donna Adelson sleeping on a prison bed, complaining, "Oh, it hurts, it's uncomfortable," like Brian Koberger does about not getting vegan sides for the rest of your pathetic life in prison. Hope you got enough joy in controlling others' lives while you were out, or destroying them, Donna. This ain't gonna end super well. That earwax is gonna build up so much you ain't gonna hear anybody sneaking up on you, Donna. Stealing your canteen snacks. Clean them ears. For jurors, Robert's testimony reinforced the theme prosecutors have been hammering. Donna was not a grandmother caught up in her children's disputes. She was the one pulling strings. And after Markell was killed, she seemed more interested in controlling the fallout than actually finding answers. It was some damning testimony. You can watch the whole thing on our channel and wherever it is, YouTube or podcasts. You got to hear the brother's testimony. It's a thing. And then there's Jeffrey Lacasse. I'm not sure. I apologize. The outsider who saw too much, but he wasn't always an outsider. He was dating Wendy for a while. And Wendy apparently remembers more things when not on the stand. And she talks about more things when not on the stand. If Robert brought the perspective of an estranged son, Jeffrey Lacasse brought something else entirely, the eyes of an outsider who briefly dated Wendy in 2014. His testimony over 2 days has been some of the most dramatic yet, offering jurors a look at conversations and moments that prosecutors argue link Wendy and, by extension, Donna directly to motive and planning. Lacasse described on June 4th, 2014, a coffee shop meeting where Wendy abruptly canceled a planned vacation with him. The trip was set for July 11th, the 17th, returning the day before Markell's murder. Wendy's explanation was that she was worried she might not be back in time to pick up her children on July 18th. Well, you make arrangements for that. It's a vacation, Wendy. Sometimes things happen, flights get delayed, whatever. You figure it out. To LaCase, the reasoning made no sense. Their flight was scheduled to land the night before, and Wendy's schedule was planned months in advance. So what did you know, Wendy, about those days before anything happened that you needed to be around town for? Was it really just picking up the kids? Around the same time, Wendy asked him to look at her television. You know, the whole, it's cheaper to buy you this TV than a Hitman television. And Charlie, what he saw was not a minor malfunction into, I don't know, an educated individual with remote common sense that's lived more than 2 years of life could look at the television and go, looks like somebody punched it. Impact damage. You know, something hits a screen, it shatters. It happens to these. It happens to TVs. These are TVs behind me. You go and punch it, you're going to see, you know, it's spidering out of damage. That's how that works. It's not just, oh, there's some lines on the TV, as she described. There was a couple lines on the TV. And I thought, you know, should I get a new TV or should I see if it can be fixed? Well, the ex-boyfriend said it looked like somebody stood in front of it and struck it. And usually when that happens to a TV, it's kind of effed. It's done. It's, yeah, I mean, newer TVs, you do that, it's, yeah. And this was 2011. There were flat screens then. Even more damaging flat screens then, actually, too. You could damage them a lot easier. And I'm guessing, oh, maybe Wendy, in a really bad, angry day, realizing her family did what they did, and now the walls are closing in. I could have seen, you know, maybe somebody chucked something at that screen. Maybe somebody hit that screen. Realizing what that screen represented. Then came July 13th, just 5 days before Markel's murder. LaCase testified that Wendy told him, the only way I'll ever be able to relocate is if something happens to Danny. It's a weird way of putting it. You know, I was in a marriage for a while, and I was in a situation where a stepdaughter was not going to be, you know, I just kind of assumed they weren't going to be able to relocate because, you know, they wanted to parent their kid. And I would never describe it like that. If I were to describe you like, well, you know, if we wanted to move and they gave permission or they wanted to come or, you know, that's probably how it would work. Not if something happens. What a weird, ominous way of putting that. I mean, true. I mean, he could have accidentally gotten hit by a bus, eaten by a wolf, ate, you know, some Tide Pods. Anything's possible, right? When he pushed back, she confided something even more chilling. According to him, he said last summer, this was him quoting Wendy. Last summer, Charlie looked into all options to take care of Dan Markel, or the Dan Markel problem. The Dan Markel problem. Including hiring a hitman. It would cost about $15,000. LaCoste said this was not the TV joke. That Charlie had been known for making. The joke was said with levity, he testified. This was different. This was serious. She asked to tell me in confidence, which you don't do before a joke. It made my stomach flip, is what he testified to. What'd you do? if you're sitting across from someone and they tell you that. On July 14th, during what LaCase called a strange yoga date, Wendy presented or pressed him for detailed information about his travel plans for Friday the 18th. Where would he be going? What route would he take? LaCase said the questions baffled him, especially since Wendy had just broken things off and said she didn't want to spend time with him that day. In hindsight, he testified the route he described overlapped with the area where the killers fled after shooting Markell. He also recalled Wendy later telling him about a celebration dinner with Charlie after the murder. At that dinner, she vomited at the table, you know, like you do. For jurors, LaCase's testimony added something the prosecution had lacked, a firsthand account of Wendy, and by extension, the family, speaking openly about Markell's death as the only way to achieve relocation. It also tied timing and logistics directly to the week of the murder. Was Wendy trying to set her ex-boyfriend up for being the suspect or the person they eventually charged with this in a real sloppy, crappy way? I understand Wendy's got immunity in certain ways of testifying here, but there's a lot out there on you, Wendy. Your ex-boyfriend is telling the truth. I think I'd be thankful for those years you had with your children while they were young, because I'm not sure you're going to get those with any grandkids. You may be looking like Donna back there. That may be you in a handful of years. Just picture yourself. I don't know. It's a big question. It's a big question. I'm curious to get your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. All this taken together, the testimony from Wendy, Robert, and LaCase offers a devastating narrative for the prosecution. Wendy admitted her mother's overbearing involvement, Robert describing her chilling indifference. And LaCase provided firsthand accounts of conversations where Wendy tied relocation to Markell's death and invoked her brother Charlie by name. The prosecution's theory is simple. Donna Adelson wasn't a grandmother sitting passively on the sidelines. She was the one who believed relocation was non-negotiable. She was the one feeding her daughter strategies to take control of Dan Markell. And she was the one who, when Markell was shot dead, responded not with shock, but with silence and a warning to her son not to talk to investigators. The defense will argue otherwise, portraying Donna as an emotional mother who said ugly things in the heat of bitter custody battles, but never conspired to kill. But after these 2 days of testimony, jurors have heard her own daughter call her controlling, her own son call her uncaring, and her daughter's ex-boyfriend describe conversations that sound far too close to a blueprint for murder. For Donna Adelson, the words of those closest to her may prove harder to defend than any document or recording. There's more to come in the trial of Donna Adelson, and we'll keep talking about it and covering it for you right here. Tell me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Love to get your thoughts. And be sure to press subscribe while you are there as well so you don't miss any of this trial and our coverage. We have live courtroom testimony coming out for you every single day as it's given. We throw it up on YouTube and on our podcast platform so you can listen or watch. And of course, discussions throughout the day as well. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.